that a flying disc has been found and is now in the possession of the Army.
Tough religion for me, what the heck that could be.
Okay, well, let's see what's friendly anyway, okay?
There's two of them, and they're acting
fine, both sides, but I'm sorry,
like
I
say that.
Oh my God, I hope that's a plane. Oh Jesus, please be a plane. Oh, please. Come on, Lisa, are you ready for this?
My cameraman said, what the hell is that midway across the Hudson River? It was a perfectly circular disc.
What a thing
to cover it. Sort of 100 yards away. I could have hit it with a brick if I thrown.
For the first time in our history, we're studying something that's studying us.
Nobody told me that the days like
this. Suddenly, something else flew into the frame. Fired a beam of light. It struck the dummy warhead. Doing a circle, if you can imagine, circling our warhead. Fired another beam of light at it, which struck the warhead.
The Virtually Strange Network presents Strange Days Indeed, your premier source for UFO information, with your host, Errol Bruce Knapp.
Yes, indeed, these are strange days. Indeed. And this program reflects the UFO side of the strangeness. Welcome to those of you listening here in Canada, on the web via the live stream, and to you listening wherever you are, in your car, in your plane, in someone else's plane, on the train, boats, whatever it is that you're listening to that podcast in. Welcome to program 392. Tonight, Dave Ferlott with his take on it, our British correspondent Stuart Miller, a Toronto area witness, and the producer-director of the second edition of the beautifully produced DVD on Crop Circles, Star Dreams. Robert Nicol will join us. Driving News Talk 1010 tonight is... Hello, stranger. It's Dean Gwilandi. And doing the same thing in Montreal eventually, Jim Pacheco. And it's good to have you both with us. Jim Pacheco is always a late starter, isn't he? As always, there's much going on in the world of UFOs this week. You may recall that last week we were awaiting a big UFO-related report out of the U.S. out of the United Kingdom. And here's what United Press International had to say on Monday about that announcement. Yeah, another UFO study, this time by the British government, has concluded that there is no proof that alien life forms exist. The 400-page report, Unidentified Aerial Phenomena in the UK, was kept secret for 6 years and was made public only through a Freedom of Information Act from Sheffield's Hallam University. The report's unidentified author or authors, rumored to have been contracted by the Ministry of Defense over there, a former flying officer, according to some discussion on the Project 1947 list. The report's unidentified author or authors say they failed to find evidence to support the existence of unidentified flying objects. The BBC said on Monday, and what's been interesting about it is the sort of limited media coverage that has happened on the Condyne report, as it's being called, sort of cross between the Condon and that's Condon and Project Sign, as in Condyne report, is they've all said it's a scientific study. Yeah, by a former Royal Air Force flying officer. Sounds like science to me. The report explains UFO sightings by people in Britain and around the world are the result of physical, electrical, and magnetic phenomena in the atmosphere, mesosphere, and ionosphere. The report concludes the close proximity of plasma-related fields can adversely affect a vehicle or person. Local fields of this type have been medically proven to cause responses in the temporal lobes of the human brain. These result in the observer sustaining and later describing and retaining his or her own vivid but mainly incorrect description of what is experienced. Yeah, okay. Actually, it's quite an interesting read. If you go to tonight's program listing, there's a link there to the full report, and you might find it interesting, too, to go and read that. Actually, there are several positive portions of that report as far as UFOs are concerned. Unidentified aerial phenomena, the report calls them. And it also admits that not all reports of unidentified flying phenomena are plasma balls. Sounds like a bunch of plasma balls to me. However, that's the Ministry of Defense, and UFOs don't exist, and there's more confirmation of it. And yet we keep coming across thousands and thousands of people who've had very strange experiences, and they ain't been seeing plasma balls, have they?
Here with his take on it is Dave Berlot.
It appears that an interesting rift has developed within ufology, and it threatens to undermine the hard work of ufologists who have been trying for decades to find out what UFOs are, where they are coming from, and why they are here. The rift is developing because there are elements within ufology that are questionable. We have New Age ufology, which incorporates Raelians, Heaven's Gate, and other individuals and organizations that claim to be in contact with aliens or extraterrestrials on a regular basis. Most claim to communicate with beings from Alpha Centauri, and some have claimed to be in contact with beings from Saturn, Jupiter, and other planets within our solar system. They claim to contact these beings when they enter into a trance, much like mediums who conduct seances to contact the deceased. Of course, these New Age groups are given instructions to pass along or messages to give to the rest of the world, etc. The danger, of course, comes about when it leads to the instructions being to shed our earthly husks through suicide so we can join our space brothers in a higher plane of existence, similar to what happened with the Heaven's Gate group. Another element that appears to be growing within ufology is exopolitics. This is the group that I have said numerous times must believe that the movie Men in Black was a documentary. Although I say that tongue-in-cheek, when you examine the current beliefs of exopoliticers, it would appear that much of what they claim comes right out of that movie. We have government conspiracy, military and secret government groups working hand in hand with aliens. We have good aliens who are working with us to fight off the bad aliens who are responsible for all the bad things that are happening to our planet and to us. The bad aliens are being blamed for new diseases such as AIDS, Ebola, etc. They're being blamed for global warming. If you talk with some of the exopolitics group, I'm sure you will probably find that some of them actually blame the bad aliens because they didn't win the last draw in the lottery. The problem is that exopolitics is based on the very shaky foundation of the word of whistleblowers like Colonel Corso, who claims that he was responsible for seeding most, if not all, of the technological advances we've achieved in the last six decades from backwards engineered alien technology. Now, I've already done an expose of many of the technologies Colonel Corso claims to have been responsible for, and I showed that the actual discovery of the technologies predate his claim to being exposed to the alien technologies he says was responsible for them. You see, the exopolitics group have developed an interesting theory, because if you examine, what you'll see is that the theory tells us what the UFOs are. It tells us who is piloting them, some 57 different species, according to Dr. Sala, and why they are here. It's a nice, neat package, all gift-wrapped for us. Well, the problem is when you peel away all that nice gift-wrapping, you discover that's what's really contained inside. It's a whole bunch of bovine fecal matter. Now, when it comes to ufology, here's the facts. We do not know what UFOs are. We do not know where they are coming from. We do not know why they are here. We believe that our government is hiding information from UFOs or about UFOs from us, and our government has lied to us in the past, and they do routinely hide things from us. And point number six, to get complete and full disclosure from our government is going to require a concerted effort with only reliable and conscientious information and witnesses. Things like New Age ufology, exopolitics, and whistleblowers with less than stellar credentials will not only delay the long hoped for government disclosure, it may very well undermine the entire field of ufology in the long run. But that's just my take on it.
Dave Vermont, every week at this time. Strange days, indeed.
Yes, indeed, Dave Furlott. That's a concern of a lot of people, is having the years of work by the good, solid, serious researchers undermined.
Yeah, it gets blown right out the window. You know, we muddy the waters considerably.
Mm-hmm.
And it's, you know, like people like Richard Hall, who spent decades of his life doing nothing more than trying to get at hard, cold facts.
Exactly.
You know?
Mm-hmm.
And that's the whole thing behind it. It's what we got to look at, is we got to say, okay, come on, get away with some of this other stuff. Let's concentrate on what we have, what we can go after, and deal with that. And that's,
stop making stuff up.
Yeah,
I mean, there's enough strangeness going on without all of the stuff that's being made up around it. I mean, it's ridiculous.
Exactly.
And the associations that are being made, you know. I don't know. I don't know how it is that people manage to stray off the straight and narrow. It's a puzzle to me, brother.
The trick is, if we pull somebody into a congressional hearing or a Senate hearing, and the guy comes out and says, yeah, well, last week, Chi from Alpha Centauri was telling me all about this. It's like, oh, yeah, okay, great. You know? Okay, there we go, pal.
Mm-hmm.
Bye.
Mm-hmm.
Next.
Well, that's a concern. That's a concern. And there's just not enough seriosity, if that is a word, by certain groups and individuals who are sort of the dark side of ufology.
Yeah, that's a good way to put it, dark side.
Mm-hmm. Dave Furlott, thank you, sir.
Thank you.
Listen, I look forward to listening to it again on the podcast this week.
Hey, me too, actually.
Yes. Good night, Dave Furlott.
Good night.
We'll talk to you next week.
For sure.
Rick Doty is my god. .blogspot.com is Stuart Miller's blog. Let me say that again. Rick Doty is my god. Richard Doty, you have been immoralized with Stuart Miller's blog. And the reason I mention the Blogspot tonight first, rather than UFO Review, which Stuart Miller publishes every few weeks is the way it's going, is the reason? Well, because on Saturday, June 10th, a one-day conference on ufology and the paranormal at Altrincham Masonic Hall, Branksome, Clay Lane, Timperley in Cheshire. That's Saturday, June the 9th. The speakers, Nick Redfern, Paul Kimball from our East Coast here in Canada, and Neil Morris, and Dave Sadler. An interesting lineup. Good evening, good morning, good day, Stuart Miller.
Good evening, Errol. Good evening, everybody.
You know, I didn't realize that you lived so close to Corey Street.
I don't live that close to Corey Street. I live about 12 miles away from it.
Well, that's a lot closer than I am.
Well, that is true.
Yes.
That is true.
Yes.
Would you like me to call by there and just give you your regards?
Oh, I'd love that. I would dearly love that. Been a fan for, 44 years now or something.
In fact, half of them live around my way.
Well, I'm not surprised. You live in a very posh neighborhood.
Apparently I do.
Apparently you do. And half of those people, oh, wouldn't you love to live next door to Norris? Yes, but that's Corey at Coronation Street, and these are UFO-type moments. Interesting, so you decided to throw your hat into the conference ring.
Yes, I've been thinking about it for quite some time. Mm-hmm. And when Nick Rosen told me that he was coming back over to the UK for a few months, I thought, well, now is the time to act.
Mm-hmm.
Also, conferences in the UK seem to have died a bit of a death since UFO magazine closed, and as a consequence, its own conferences stopped. And there certainly hasn't been anything in the sort of South Manchester, well, in the Manchester area generally, really of a primarily UFO significance for some time. So I thought it would be appropriate to give it a kick off and see how it goes.
Yes.
Delighted as well that Paul Kimball is coming over, not just to speak for us, but he's over here filming, and we'll speak. And
the top 10 UFO cases, apparently, is what he's working on.
Yes. Well, and Wilbert Smith.
Well, but his documentary is not about Wib Smith, though. It's the top 10, isn't it? Or am I?
Sorry, I beg your pardon. I thought in terms of what he was going to speak about.
Oh, what he's speaking about. Yes, because you said he was shooting film, and that's why I chimed in on the end with the top 10 UFOs documentary that he was making.
I am sure that he will be making his way over to Rendlesham and perhaps one or two other places.
Neil Morris.
Yeah, indeed, yes.
Who contributes on occasion to the UFO updates list.
Indeed, as you know, Neil has been one of the people that's been heavily involved in researching the alien autopsy film and is going to give us an update in the light of Mr. Santilli's confession, and indeed the AA film itself, the movie, coupled with the original film. I'll just bring this up to date. I think he's going to present some of Ed Gurman's research as well, which should be interesting. Let's hear what Neil's got to say.
Well, yes, it's just that I'm one of those people who wrote Alien Autopsy off right from when Reg Presley first came on the scene, late of the Trogs and Wild Things, and I have, you know, had my tongue very firmly planted in my cheek whenever I talk about the Alien Autopsy film, but that's my perspective from over here, you know?
Let me challenge you on one point, Errol.
Mm-hmm.
Go and see, if it comes to Canada, go and see the movie.
Anton Deck's movie?
Yep, mm-hmm. Yep. And tell me what you think about the film footage in the last 30 seconds of the film.
You and I have talked about this before, and I think
we have,
even on the radio. And yes, I will, if it makes the big screens here. If not, I'll go rent the DVD, if that's possible.
I'm sure that's more likely than a general release, I would think.
Yeah. And just to round things out at your conference upcoming on the 10th of June, which, interestingly enough, is the next time you're due on this program.
It is, yes. I shall have to dash from one place to the next. It is Dave Sadler, who is well into UFOs, but is also involved in an organization called UPA, I think it is, or UAP.
UPIA?
That even sounds more likely.
Yeah, upia.co.uk.
Yep, which is basically an investigator. They investigate the paranormal.
Uh-huh.
So it's sort of tends to the ghost side of things, and he's going to be speaking at Chiltern Hall, which is the most haunted building in Britain, allegedly. There does seem, when you read about it, to have been some extremely interesting things that have gone on there.
Well, I'd like to follow up on some of that, just as my own personal study.
Well, it's a very good varied bill.
It is a good bill, actually, and not a bad price at the door for £15, which is what, $30?
Probably a little less, actually.
Mm-hmm. That's not a bad deal at all.
Well, I hope people come, and not only that, I hope people enjoy themselves. Mm-hmm. That's the most important thing.
There is a link to all the information, Stuart Miller's upcoming conference on Saturday, June 10th. From tonight's program listing, look at program 392, and it's right there in the news and info section. standing up and barely, because it is fairly early on Sunday morning across the pond in the United Kingdom, is Stuart Miller, a British correspondent and publisher of UFO Review, the online zine. UFOReview.net is the place to go. And daily, Stuart updates all the news that there is fit to print. You want archaeology, you want space, you want alternative living, cryptozoology, nature, the paranormal, UFOs, it's all there on the front page of UFOReview.net, your one-stop interesting news shopping site. Lord.
That's very kind of you.
Well, it's very kind of you to do that as a public service.
Well, I enjoy doing it, actually. It's educational.
Yes, it is. And not only for the reader, but for you, too.
I meant myself primarily.
Those Google search bots must just go bananas at night for you, Stuart Miller.
They do.
Okay, let's get into this recent, actually released last Sunday, a day early apparently, a report by the British Ministry of Defence. Who labelled it the Condyne Report? They did, or was that something that Messrs. Roberts, Clark, McGonagall, and
Gary Anthony.
Gary Anthony, thank you.
Yeah. It was the MOD who insist and swear blind that it is not meant to be or to demonstrate any connection to sign or to condom, but it was actually a computer-generated random name.
Oh.
No,
yeah.
I believe that.
If
they're lying about the name,
then I should have
lying about it.
I should have won the $8 million lottery tonight. Yes.
There are a couple of points I'd like to clear up that came up on the list, actually. Mm-hmm. Both, I must say, made by Steve Kaiser.
On the UFO updates, yes.
Yes. In response to a comment that Steve Bassett made about the story grabbing the media all over the United States in particular, as well as obviously the UK, mm-hmm. Steve replied that as far as he was concerned, it hadn't had much notice or attention in America. I can tell you that, I'm afraid, Steve, if you're listening, that isn't correct. Firstly, Dave Clark himself actually posted on a British mailing list a long, long, long list of media outlets that had shown an interest in the story.
Mm-hmm.
It was just meant to be a sample rambling. There was more than, I think, 50 names there. The vast majority of them were North American. And also, I can tell you, from doing my own work for the news service on UFO Review, I can tell you it was all over the States. It really was.
Yeah, I've had the Google bot send me all kinds of links for the story this week. There must have been at least a couple of three dozen that I got.
Yeah. The other point that Steve made in response to Don Ledger was, I'm not saying Steve was criticizing Don for commenting on the project before it was published, but he sort of made the point that maybe it's not appropriate to comment, because I think the phrase or the words that Steve used were, at this moment in time, before it's actually made available to the public, which it will be on Monday,
mm-hmm.
We're relying on the comments of a few people who have scanned the document. Now, that isn't accurate. It is a few people, but they haven't scanned the documents. They've read it. And those people, Dave Clark, Andy Roberts, Joe McGonagall, Gary Anthony, philosophically, within a UFO sense, are skeptics. I think it is more than reasonable to comment on the comments of people who have read the document, and they certainly have read it, they haven't scanned it, particularly when you consider where they're coming from on it. And the general consensus from all of them, really, is that they may not put it quite as sort of strongly as I'm going to put it, but that the science is junk, or rather, most of the science in the document is junk. The document is interesting for other reasons, but not necessarily because of the theories that it proposes. It gives an insight into the way the MOD works. It's fascinating on its own that the MOD actually did this. Yeah, I wonder how many other governments around the world are actually interested enough in ufology to commission a serious report. And I must congratulate the MOD for having the guts to release it as well. But really, in terms of impact, it's not had a major impact in the UK in terms of changing people's views or opinions about UFOs.
Yeah.
The media have reported it, yes, in a negative sense, but it doesn't affect people.
They mostly report things in a negative sense anyway. And I don't think, as you and I have discussed earlier, it's going to make any damn bit of difference one way or t'other. You know what, Stuart? We're out of time.
Already?
Yes.
Okay.
Hey, listen, good luck on June 10th.
Thank you very much.
And I hope you have a wonderful door there, as they say. The door was bloody marvelous!
UFO. Well, I hope it will be.
The link to Stuart's conference is on tonight's program listing. Go check it out. If you're in that area, go to the conference. You'll have a wonderful time. We'll talk to you in a month's time, Stuart.
Thank you.
Good night. Bye-bye. A week or so ago, a time-shifting with a digital video recorder, one of the CSI programs, and ripping through toward the end, and there was a promo for the CFTO News television station here in Toronto. And there was an image there with a graphic over it that said, UFO over Toronto? And unfortunately, it was, of course, a couple of days later when we were looking at that particular episode of the CSI series. And I thought it was lost. But in talking to Chris Rutkowski this week, he asked me if I'd heard about this sighting. And I said, yes, well, I'd seen it briefly on the CFTO news promo. And Chris said, well, I just happen to have the telephone number of the guy in Scarborough who shot that footage. So I immediately got on the phone to Richard. And for those of you who don't know where Scarborough is, it's a suburb of Toronto, part of the greater Toronto area. And on the phone with us from Scarborough is Richard. Good evening, sir.
How are you?
I'm good. An interesting sighting you had. Tell us about it.
Well, it was just something that's truly amazing.
Okay.
I mean, you don't get an object like this appear at your basic front door every day.
Okay, so time and place.
It was about 10:30 at night in West Scarborough. I was just sitting on my balcony having a cigarette while watching air traffic move around the city.
Mm-hmm.
And something just caught the corner of my eye off to my right, and I saw it was different. It was kind of like brown or a rusty orange color, but it had no nav lights on, and that's what really got me. And then as it got closer, I saw that it was circular. And, of course, we don't have anything that flies that is circular. And it was large.
It was large.
It was large, yes.
So large and circular and sort of rusty orangey brown, huh?
On the underneath side, yes.
Yeah.
And it had lights around the edges and the top of it. And I ran in the apartment and I told my girlfriend and her daughter that there was a UFO outside. And they thought I was smoking crack. So at the same time, I'm running into the bedroom to get my camera.
Uh-huh.
And they flew up to the balcony and with their amazement, it's right in front of them. And by the time I got my camera loaded with cassette and battery,
mm-hmm.
It was pretty close. It had moved up quite a bit, probably was a mile and a half in 20 seconds. And it was more coming right over our building. So I only got a good 10, 12 seconds of good footage of it with infrared because the other video shooting just wouldn't come up. It was just a blur.
No registration at all on regular video.
No, it just wouldn't come up.
So,
I was looking at it going, this isn't coming through. So I switched to IR, and bam, there it was.
So Richard is lucky that he had infrared setting on his camera and managed to catch some of this image on digital videotape.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Now, you said nav lights, and you sound as if you know what you're talking about as far as aircraft are concerned.
Yeah, I've been around aviation since I was pretty well born. My father had a few planes when I was a kid. I was in the armed forces, so I've flown in many aircraft.
Uh-huh.
I've.
Do you fly yourself?
I have flown in the past,
mm-hmm,
yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And venture to air shows. I've got numerous photographs and other video of air shows. So I kind of had an idea what to be looking for in an aircraft.
Right.
And when it became a circle, it was like, wow,
So did you, because I have seen the video, you were kind enough to give me a copy of it.
Yeah.
Did you see any detail on this object?
Well, my girlfriend Susan was watching it with binoculars, and she described things that I couldn't see myself.
Through the camera, in infrared, yeah.
Right. She described the outer edges of the craft as being smooth and rough areas, like modules. It wasn't a smooth, I guess how she described it, wasn't smooth all the way around the sides or the edges of it. So it was like modular. It was, one part was smooth, she said, another part was rough. And it was like, okay, different kind of description. I couldn't really see that myself.
Yeah, yeah.
But, she just asked me if I got anything on the video. She wanted to make sure that there was something that was proving what she was seeing as well.
Now, were there lights on this thing that were visible?
Yeah. Around the edges and around the top of it. I wasn't privy to seeing the top of it because she had a better vantage point than I did.
Mm-hmm.
But it was moving fairly slightly, 100 miles an hour. And then it went right over top of our building. And then it ran downstairs, ran out to the parking lot, and I thought I lost it because it was in an easterly course.
Mm-hmm.
And Michelle said that it was behind me and straight above. So I looked straight. I forgot I had the camera in my hand. I was just in awe. I was just looking at this thing, and it was just unbelievable to watch it. And it was like, here, have a gift. You can watch this for a while.
Yeah, a lot of people say that seeing one of these things is a life-altering experience.
It gives you a different perspective.
Mm-hmm.
Definitely. Scary in some ways, because if you think, if it is man-made, then what else aren't they telling us about?
Yeah.
You know.
Mm-hmm. And we, as you said earlier on, we don't have anything round that flies that we're aware of.
Not since the Avro car. And it didn't fly.
Oh, my. Richard, I want to thank you for being with us and telling us about this. Next time, I think some still pictures are in order, too, huh?
Definitely. I forgot that I had two SLRs loaded and ready to rock. And I know the difference. I mean, if they were in that format, they'd be... a far better image.
Yeah, well, at least you had the presence of mind to grab the video camera, and when you couldn't see anything through the viewfinder, switch over to infrared night vision.
Yes.
Yeah. Thank you, Richard. I hope you get some more footage.
And hope to talk to you soon.
Yeah, that'll be an interesting too. Good night, Richard. Thank you, sir.
Good night. Thank you. Bye-bye.
A couple of years ago, you may have missed the opportunity to go and see a really stunning documentary called Star Dreams when it was last here in Toronto, when Robert Nickel first premiered it here in Toronto. Well, this coming Thursday, May 18th, at Innes Town Hall at the U of T, is an opportunity to go and see the recut version of that. The music, the editing, the images of agriglyphs, crop circles are absolutely glorious. It's a beautifully done documentary and worth going to see if you don't have a big screen TV at home and you don't have the DVD. Go see it at Innes Town Hall on Thursday, May the 18th. Joining us on the line from somewhere in Ontario, this is a man on the move constantly, Robert Nickel, the producer, director, and a putter together of this beautiful DVD, Star Dreams, joins us on the line. Good evening, Robert.
Good evening, Errol.
Good to have you on again. We did this a couple of years ago, and you kindly sent me a copy of the DVD, and again with the recut. I guess, what would you call it? Version 2?
Well, it's just the latest. I guess you could say it's a new version. We put in the latest crop circles and former interviews, and we now have quite a section on life, potential life on Mars, and we get into orbs. So it's quite a new version from the old one.
That was something that I saw. There was an image of an orb there, and you did a nice slow zoom into it, and there appeared to be a figure in that. Was that an artist rendering, or was that an image of an orb somebody shot?
No, that was a straight photograph. It was on somebody's digital camera. And
really?
What we say in the film, anyway, is that our interpretation of orbs are they're beings of light. sent to communicate to humanity at this time.
Mm.
So they are sort of an adjacent phenomena to the crop circle phenomena.
Let's go back a few years, and let's talk about you for a moment. What got you interested in crop circles, Robert Nickel?
Well, I've been involved in ET research since I was a kid in high school, and the interesting story there is in 1952 there were 5 discs over the White House.
Mm-hmm.
And in 1953 that movie came out, The Day the Earth Stood Still with Michael Rennie, which was sort of about that incident, and that really got me interested in the whole thing, and I followed along for many years and got into around 95 into crop circles because it really spoke to me. But I was at one of those UFO conferences once, and an elderly gentleman came and sat down for breakfast and said, may I join you? And he asked me the same question, what got you into this? And I said, well, in 1952, there were 5 discs over the White House. And he said, I was one of the pilots scrambled to chase those discs. And he reaches into his wallet, and he hauls out a perfect color photograph, perfectly sharp, that his wingman took of a disc chasing him.
Oh.
Fascinating, huh?
Mm-hmm.
So it took me about 5 years to get a Canadian broadcaster in doing it, and Space came on board, providing that I emphasize the Canadian crop circle experience.
Mm-hmm.
We get about 20 a year here in Canada.
Yes.
So I did, and out it went. I managed to cobble together enough money and deferred fees and everything else to get the documentary going, and then we've now had about 120 public screenings, and it's kind of turned into a grassroots hit.
Yeah, well, I imagine, because it's a work of art, you know, let alone the content and the subject. I mean, you put it together. You've done a magnificent job on it. It's it's very, very tasty, is what it is. So, what do you think you've discovered about crop circles?
Well, certainly we're having a communique from a higher intelligence. And we've had now 11,000 since 1980, and they figure less than half are actually reported, so it's no small thing. And no two are alike. They're like snowflakes. So we get these very magnificent and complex symbols. Some of them have mathematics we don't quite understand yet. And they each year they seem to get more complex and more sophisticated.
Mm-hmm.
As we get to learn more about them and study them. And they're built around complex geometric formulas, initially based on sacred geometry.
Mm-hmm.
And sacred geometry is a sort of cosmic blueprint or the template behind all forms. So it's communicating to us mind to mind with very pure abstract images, pure form.
Hmm.
Now, there's a consensus among many, pretty much all the crop circle, the serious researchers agree that it's from non-human intelligence. And then there's a difference of opinions, but we got most of the crop circle experts in the film. And the whole film is structured around about 14 questions, so I've tried to take a strict kind of journalistic approach. But the principle of the whole thing is that, and my particular motivation to do it was, here are being communicated to from a very benign source, and we're given a helping hand, and we're basically ignoring it. You don't see it on mainstream TV. You don't see it in newspapers. It's just being ignored. So I felt I had to do something, lift these circles off the field, so to speak, and put them out into public imagination. So that's what I did.
Really, the only thing that one ever sees on television is the hoaxers,
yeah,
and the guys who actually can do some pretty intricate designs overnight in a field.
Well, they figure that about 3% or less than 3% are hoaxed.
Yeah, because it all can't be the same bunch of guys, whether it's, well, Doug and Dave are sort of defunct as a hoaxing team now.
Well,
but there are some young Turks out there who are out there doing it.
Yeah, there are people doing it, and the infamous Doug and Dave claim they made them all, and that was in 91, but the year before, in 1990, there were 1,000 individual crop circles in England alone over a 3-month period, so it must have been obvious to anybody with any common sense that Doug and Dave, ubiquitous Doug and Dave, couldn't have made them all.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes you have 3 in one night. But unfortunately, the media picked up on that, world media, that they're all man-made, and therefore that was what went out as misinformation, and the public either lost interest, or certainly the media didn't continue with it because they figured they're all man-made, so what's the point? But, of course, they couldn't have been more wrong.
Well, these two old geezers full of cider or whatever it was that they drank when they went out and made these hoaxes, as you say, could not have made 1,000 of these crop circles in a single year. Robert Nickel is our guest, and he's going to be with us through until the end of the program tonight. Robert will be in town in Toronto on Thursday, May the 18th, in town, in Toronto, at Innes Hall at the University of Toronto at 7:30 p.m. If you want to know more about that, you can go to tonight's program listing at virtuallystrange.net, Strange Days Indeed. There's a link there to more information. The sensational, award-winning feature documentary Star Dreams is Robert Nickel's project, and he will be showing that on Thursday. Robert Nickel, because we have audience in Montreal as well, have you screened that in Montreal at all, or are you about to do that?
Well, we did have a screening at SFU, not SFU. It wasn't that well attended. We couldn't get too much press on it. If we get an article in the paper with a crop circle picture, we usually pack them in.
Mm-hmm.
But if we don't get a sympathetic press, then we don't do too well, because we can't afford to buy an ad. You'd have to sell 100 seats to pay for the cost of an ad.
Right.
So what us low-budget documentary film producers do is you try to talk editors or TV shows or
radio programs.
Radio shows. Yeah,
and be very happy.
It would be great to have opportunity.
Yeah, if you decide to go back to Montreal and screen again, let me know, and we'll talk you up. It's well worth encouraging people to go see. I sat there again, and this must be about the fifth or sixth time that I watched it. When it ran on Space, I watched it there with the commercial breaks as well. It's just so beautiful. It's fascinating stuff. I mean, you know, whether you accept that, you know, some of these beings come from Arcturus or wherever it is, you know, that some of the New Age side of things suggests. It's beautiful. The glyphs, the designs are absolutely breathtaking, and how that happens, I don't know.
You know, it's a very interesting thing. Most people, a lot of people have heard about crop circles, but they have no idea. They come to the film and they're absolutely blown away. And some people burst into tears and they see certain symbols, and they leave the theater feeling hopeful and uplifted, because here we're being helped. We're being given these great realizations of consciousness to help lift us up to higher levels of being. And they've come around at this time of this great transition we're going through on the planet as we shift into higher frequencies of being. So people feel grateful and profoundly thankful that we're getting this message. Unfortunately, you don't get it in mainstream newspapers. You don't read it about it in the papers. You don't see about it. It's sort of been kept hidden.
Mm-hmm.
So my job as the steward of the crop circle message is to go around and show it as often as I can. And, you know, another interesting factor is this, that we have about a 30% sell-through rate on the DVD. In other words, 30% of the audience buys it after they've just seen it. That's a very high indicator. And the primary reason they do so, Errol, is they want to show their friends.
Yes.
And, I could mention my website, which is just stardreams-hyphen,
mm-hmm.
stardreams, all one word, dash, cropcircles, all one word, .com.
Now,
and there's more information.
Yeah, that's in the process of being rebuilt, isn't it?
Yes, I'm trying to. It's hard to keep up to date.
Yes.
I've been on the road now just since March. We've been in 20 cities, but it's rather exhausting. And but you know, it is working though. It's getting out. We're starting to get a lot of press. We're starting to get on websites, and so there's a big buzz about it happening, and it's building a momentum, so it's starting to happen.
Mm-hmm. Now, that address for the listener, and I'll link it. I didn't want to link it from tonight's program listing to your website, because you were still under construction, and I it was something that I meant to talk to you about earlier on this afternoon, and just with a general prep time, you know, on the Saturday before the program, I didn't get to it. So that address again is Star Dreams, Star-Dreams.
Oh, Star Dreams.
Star Dreams, all one word. And then
dash or like a hyphen.
Hyphen.
Crop Circles, all one word, .com.
There we go.
And there's another one called the Crop Circle Connector, which has many of the people, the experts we have in the film, are on the Crop Circle Connector, because you go into that one and it connects you to all their websites. So if you want to check that out.
So that's CropCircleConnector.com as well?
Yeah, I think so. Mm-hmm. Just type that in, you got it.
Okay. You can always Google it anyway, and that will get you there. Interesting, the thing that fascinates me is the reaction of people. For the most part, they all get buzzed out in one way or another when they enter these formations.
You know, there is a variety of responses. Some people can't go in them. They just feel there's a barrier there.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of it has to do with the fact that whatever mindset or mood that you're in when you go in, it's because everything seems to be amplified. So each crop circle has its own electromagnetic signature. And since we're beings of vibratory frequency, if we go in, then we correspond with those energies. And some people have had spontaneous healings. Some people have gone back in time. And a really interesting thing I just found out a little while ago was we put a crop circle that was in Red Deer, I think in 2001, an acre in size, and was a Star of David. And I ran into the neighbor of that farmer, and the next year he planted, I think that was in wheat, the first one, and the next year he planted oats in that field. And normally you get 80 bushels an acre of oats, and in the place where the crop circle had been, you got 160 bushels per acre, so he doubled his yield. So there was some residual sort of frequency within, I guess you could say, some kind of electromagnetic frequency within the soil itself, and the soil itself had been energized in some way that caused the plants to double their yield.
Yes. We've had Nancy Talbot on this program a couple of times in the past.
All right.
And Nancy talks about the cellular changes that happen both in the crop itself, in the stalk of the crop, and then the changes that happen in the soil. And those changes we can only emulate by raising the temperature around the soil and the stalk to about 800 degrees Fahrenheit. And we know what that does to living things. There's nothing left. It's incinerated. So the changes in the cellular structure of the plants look as if they've been superheated to 800 degrees Fahrenheit, and yet that's an impossibility.
Well, you know, first of all, the plant continues to grow.
Mm-hmm. Well, exactly.
It's not destroyed.
Right.
Don't destroy our food chain. My sort of take on that is that there is a light and there is heat involved, and so that the moisture in the soil and the plant is heated up and turns to steam. That's why I have blown nodes in the stalks of the plants.
Right.
And in that moment of steaming everything, everything becomes fluid, and in that brief moment, the pattern's woven into shape. And we've had well over 40 eyewitnesses to them being made, and they say they happen in less than 10 seconds. Sometimes, on average, 4 to 7 seconds, maximum 15 seconds. So that kind of blows it all man-made theory.
We were talking about as the glyphs, the agriglyphs, were formed, Robert Nickel. And what a lot of people don't realize is when they see those images taken from the air, the way that it appears that the light is catching the reflection, the gradients that happen within those designs. And what people don't realize is that those crops aren't broken. They're gently bent into those designs. So the crop actually is not damaged in any way. If anything, it's energized with some sort of energy that we're not sure we understand.
That's right. There seems to be a 30% potency increase rate in the seeds from the plants, and now there's experiments being done to see if this is in some way of another gift as part of the crop circle phenomena to bring us to strains of cereal grains that can maybe help humanity. We don't know. You know, the film was only an introduction, and even though the audience is mesmerized by it, it's just an introduction. And I would like to see, you know, crop circle meditation groups, bumper stickers, fridge magnets, coloring books. I think we should be taking this very seriously. This is my take on it. This is a language that we know on a very deep psychic level. People recognize them for the first time, and they've never seen them before,
mm-hmm.
as I did. And so I feel that this is a universal, timeless, symbolic, language based on sacred geometry that is probably the language that's used among the various extraterrestrial species in the universe to communicate to each other because it's pure form.
Mm.
I used to think mathematics was the language of the universe, but I think form is the language of the universe, pure form. And sacred geometry is the basic blueprint behind all form. And actually it's an old science coming to the fore now. And 10, 20 years ago, you type in sacred geometry on the internet and there was very little there. Now it's all over the place. It's just an amazing kind of sophisticated method of geometrics and mathematics that we're starting to, and we've learned a lot from them by studying the formulas inside these quad circles.
Mm. You know, Robert, we're out of time, unfortunately, but again, let me suggest to the listener that if you, whether you believe crop circles are extraterrestrial, you're not sure what they are, the documentary itself is absolutely beautiful, and I guarantee you that you'll want to pick up a copy and show your friends, because it's that kind of beauty that is just, it's stunning. And again, that's happening this coming Thursday at Innistown Hall at the University of Toronto here in town, 7:30 p.m. Tickets at the door. Robert Nickel, thank you, sir.
Well, thank you, Errol. It's very kind of you to give me the opportunity to speak out about this remarkable phenomenon.
And next time you're in Montreal, let me know, and we'll have you on again, or at least let people know that you will be there and where you will be.
Okay, will do.
Thanks, Robert.
Bye-bye.
Good night. And that wraps it up for us. Happy that you were able to be along with us. We will talk with you next week. Good night.
That's this week's edition of Strange Days Indeed, hosted and produced by Errol Bruce Knapp, the executive producer.